Hello, everybody. Happy Wednesday. Welcome back to Aces Up the Sleeve. I am Patty, co-hosting with the co-managing partners, because we have Mark joining us today of Pocket Aces Racing, or PAR for the quick reference, along with Jared Shoemaker. And this is great timing because we joke about it, but we went online shopping today. And Jared, we just picked up two new horses, literally, I want to say, not 5 minutes ago. So do we want to talk about them right now? Let's just jump into them and, sure. Introduce them.
We can. Yeah, we'll jump right in, and I'm going to turn most of this over to Mark because he went out and saw these, went out to Lane's Inn the other day and saw them. When the online catalog for the Fades of Tipton June sale came out last week, we started looking as we always do. And, you know, we've taken many trips out to farms, or Mark has in particular, to look at horses that are in these sales each month. And we've tried to buy a couple of them here and there, but have either all, you know, been outbid. Some of them have gone crazy amounts. We tried to buy some racing prospects and never worked out. But Mark saw a couple, he saw a bunch of horses at Lane's Inn the other day, and you know, we did not necessarily have these on our initial list, but he wanted to be thorough and see them all. So he added them, and he sent me a text. He said, "We're off the other ones and we're on these two." So, Mark, tell us a little bit about both of these Code of Honors, both of them by Code of Honor. We've got a colt and a filly.
So, yeah, I went out to Lane's End Sunday morning, met my actually the guy who runs that, Callan Strauss, is a he's been at Lane's End. I started in the business in 1995, and he was one of my first teachers at Lane's End. He's a great guy, a great horseman. He knew the Queen. We got to talking when I went out there, and I remembered he was one of the first people who actually took time to teach me something. You know, the little time I'd been in the business up until the time I met Callan, just you kind of learned as you went. You saw other people do things, but I remember Callan being one of the first people that took time to show me how to show a horse, you know. And if you were making a short list of the top horsemen in Lexington, he'd be in the top handful, you know. So I was really glad to see Callan out there. And I went through all of them, looked at all they had to offer. And we're new to this buying online. You know, it's getting more and more popular, I think, as Phasic Tipton gets deeper and deeper into it. The online sales have been around for a little while, but as I think it's taken somebody like Phasic Tipton that people can really trust to get this off the ground. And it seems like over the last 6 months, a year, since they've become heavily involved, digital sales have taken off. And Jared and I have talked about this a lot. We are better situated to take advantage of these sales, especially with the yearlings, than most people, because we're here. You know, we can treat it regular sale. You know, if we're going to buy something online, we're going for the ones that are living here in central Kentucky. So I think it's the online sales are a big advantage for us. Like I say, because we can actually go see the horses, and you can, I feel like we can bid with more confidence. So anyway, went out on Sunday, went through all the horses they had. And it's just, you know, as you learn, as you see them, pictures of them, videos of them, it's, you know, your perception is one thing, but there's nothing like seeing them in the flesh, you know? And these were the two that I zeroed in on when we were there. They're both very similar types. A lot of Code of Honor there. They're both leggy individuals. The colt is strong. The filly, doesn't carry as much mass, but I don't really like fillies that carry a ton of mass anyway. They both look like they're very athletic sorts, walk well, good hips, engage well, and they track well, good conformation. They just, the frame is really there. And I always say that with a horse like Temple City Terror when she was a yearling. You know, we bought her for $22,000. The frame was always there. And that's what these two remind me of. When these two are 2 and 3 years old, they're going to grow into beautiful swans. They're nice yearlings now, but I think they're just going to get better and better. One of the yearlings that I went out to see was probably based on the videos and the pictures. The one I like the best, when I go out and see it in the flesh, I feel like this is the best they're ever going to be. They're not going to improve. They're not going forward, Whereas these two, I had an easier time seeing them, what they would become in another year or two. And I thought the upside on these two was a lot more than the one specifically that I liked the most on the picture. And as I got to looking into it, to be honest, I didn't know a ton about the Code of Honor because unfortunately he died early on in his stallion career. I think this is the only crop he's got.
Yeah,
And
I think so.
he was a tremendous racehorse. And interest being by Noble Mission, he was a tremendous racehorse on the dirt. He broke his maiden at two Sar at Saratoga sprinting. He was second in the Kentucky Derby. He won the Fountain of Youth. He won the Jockey Club Gold Cup and the Travers. He earned almost $3 million. I think had he had a chance to progress in his stallion career, he would have been a tremendous, tremendous racehorse stallion. And so that was very encouraging. And the colt, his mother is already producing. Her first foal to hit the ground is a 2-year-old by the name of Heat, and it won first time out as a 2-year-old at Woodbine this year. I think the Phillies dam is a little bit younger, hadn't had a chance to produce as much yet, but basically I just couldn't be any happier to get these two for what we got them for.
Yeah, we got picked up him for 24,000, and it is another case of one of those where we had our budget set, and as we're sitting here watching it, and we were watching the auction occur while we're getting everything set up here for the recording, and so Mark and I are kind of back and forth, and he's like, if we can handle it, I really, really like him. Let's hit it again. So we hit it again one more time, and thankfully that was enough. And
Dad, I really want him.
And that's right. And I, okay, that's fine. And then the filly, she was a couple of hits later. And the way these online auctions work is, when somebody places a bid inside the last 2 minutes, it adds 2 minutes to the clock. So we're so focused on what's going on with the colt, the filly that went through a hip 39, two hips later, all of a sudden it popped up and said, "You won." And we just completely lost track of her because we were so focused on him. We'd lost the, we just forgotten, we'd kind of forgotten about the time extending. I knew I'd put my max bid in on her, so I felt really good about the potential that we could get her. And I knew that, we extended already on the colt, so we couldn't extend beyond where we wanted to go on her. But we had plenty of room left to pick her up as well. And just both of them are, I haven't had the chance to see them in person yet, but their pictures and their videos look fantastic. So sometime here in the next few days, probably closer to the weekend, we'll get everything together on both of those horses and get the information out, and we'll start selling shares in them. And we're getting a slightly we're getting a little bit of a head start on our yearling shopping season, which we normally do in September and October. But we've done these before. We've done young horses like this before. Social engagement, Hyperbolize, and there's been some others. And so we're thrilled with them. Thrilled that we got them. They're gorgeous, gorgeous horses. We'll get Patty out for her pictures here in the next come you know the next few days. And just can't wait to start sharing them with everybody. So if you want to take it, go ahead and take a look. It's hips 37. Well, I don't, I guess they clear the catalogs out so quickly. I don't know how much will be available by the time you hear this on the Fasig Tipton website, but they're hips 37 and 39 on the Fasig Tipton website. If you if they're still up there when this it gets released tomorrow afternoon.
And I would add that as these digital sales become a bigger part of the thoroughbred sales landscape, you know, we're, your pro our partners are going to see us doing more of this over time.
Yeah, you know, we've always talked about, you know, for years about being, you know, looking for value and looking, you know, trying to find value everywhere that we can. And this, you know, I feel like this presents a great opportunity for us, as Mark was saying earlier. And, you know, when these things get released every month, we are scouring through trying to see what we can see that looks like it might fit into our program, whether it's a mare, a horse of racing age, or a yearling, or, you know, obviously depending, you know, earlier in the, you know, late this later this year, winglings, you know, whatever the case they may be, you know, we're looking for value, and when we can take advantage of these opportunities, we certainly will.
And I would like, I pulled up Pete's profile on Equibase, and I can share a little bit, you know, about him since we have a little bit more for detail. So he broke his maiden at Gulfstream Park, and
Gulfstream,
he,
not Woodland.
yes, it was May the 11th, and he dueled, and he had a pretty awkward start. I think I watched that race. He had a very awkward start. He dueled basically the whole way, and he still kicked on, still won. They gave him a 75 Equibase figure. And he's actually a $120,000 Keeneland September yearling. So he was very well regarded at the sales by DJ Stables. And DJ Stables like to like peruse those sales, and then these horses end up running in some very nice horse in some very nice races later on. And for those who maybe don't recognize the you know coat of honors sire, because we talked about that he's a son of Noble Mission. Noble Mission is the full brother to Frankel. And Frankel is, I think, him and Dubawi are the most expensive stallions in the world. And they do incredibly well in their own right. You know, this the too cool to dance colt has a lot going for him because his brother has showed a lot of talent on that first start.
Cool. So anyway, we'll get all this together, and it'll get out this weekend. And I know there, I've had several people that listened last week speaking of new horses, asking about Malia, Wendy Lou Who's half sister. She's had just a little the very morning that we were recording, I believe, or shortly thereafter. I don't know exactly. I've lost track of my dates, but anyway. She had a little hiccup. She threw a rider and took off running around the track and got off the track and then kind of slipped and fell on the concrete and scraped up her legs a little bit. And we just wanted to be sure that there was no major issues, nothing wrong before we made her available to everybody. And you know, a week later, she's in good shape. Those cuts and scrapes have healed up. They were superficial. She's moving well. No, you know, significant or ongoing injury. Just it's just all superficial scrapes and whatnot. So she's good. And Patty went back up today to get pictures, and we'll be getting her up on the web page and available very soon as well. So that's if you're wondering why we haven't you haven't seen her yet, that's the story.
So I know as I was kind of before we did our online shopping, the original topic of this week's episode was going to be the state of Kentucky racing. I imagine that you both have kind of figured out and ironed out what it is you guys want to talk about. So do we want to kind of roll into that? Because I know lately, folks, you may have seen it. We've been losing kind of horses to claiming ranks quite a lot. So. And it's just how the industry is starting to shape up. You know, the Kentucky racing is getting tough. And I don't know who wants to start with this. So whoever's ready to go with their talking points, we can just roll into kind of your thoughts on why Kentucky racing is kind of shaping out the way it currently is.
I'll kind of just give a quick brief introduction on why, you know, the big thing is, you know, as you mentioned, Patty, yes, we've lost several horses to claim lately, some of them kind of surprising. And there's just an appetite for horses right now, for racehorses. And it's kind of changed a little bit about how things have, we've kind of typically done things and how racing has played out in our development of horses. So, you know, Mark and I have seen the industry kind of, you know, changing around us here in Kentucky. And we felt like it was important that we address this and make this available and share our thoughts so as many people can hear it as possible. So, Mark, please go right ahead.
Yeah, I nothing stays the same, right? Things are always evolving, always changing. I would say though that if we started in 2005, our first 10 to 15 years seemed to evolve a certain way and was very predictable. Something has happened in the last 4 or 5 years that has made, doing things the way we usually do them difficult to do. We're having to change and adapt. And the way the industry has changed has affected us in kind of some specific ways, but I think it's because there's been some big kind of macro changes in the industry. If you look back to, say, a period from 2015 to 2018, the purse for a maiden special weight at Churchill Downs was anywhere from $54,000 to $57,000. Maiden 50s were being run for 45, as low as 31,900 in 2018. They just kind of bounced around that area, and they've been that way for a long time. And I don't think Turfway was a pretty bad place to have your horses for the winter. Ellis was Ellis, and I don't and Kentucky Downs hadn't quite become what it is now. So, and while Kentucky, I feel like, has always been the center of thoroughbred breeding in America, and you could argue the world, I think in that time period, up to say 2018, it wasn't necessarily the capital of racing. Southern California had strong purse structures. New York probably had the best during that time period. And I feel like an effect of that is all these yearlings and 2-year-olds that are getting purchased in that time frame, a lot of them are getting diverted to Southern California, to New York, places like that. But what happened is the changes seem to coincide with the purse structure just skyrocketing in Kentucky. Expensive horses, well-bred horses, horses that, the best eyes in the country have picked out. A lot of them got filtered off to other places. I feel like because racing is so lucrative, in Kentucky, it's now become the racing capital of the world too, and you have a lot a stronger concentration of very talented horses right here. And
Mark, just real quick, just an example, just so we can share, so people can really feel what we're talking about. Copper Plate ran in a maiden special weight at Ellis Park on July 18th, 2014. The purse is $28,000. Maiden specials at Ellis Park this summer are running for 70,000, more than doubled the purses in 10 years. A maiden 30 at Turfway used to run for $10,000 purse. And I think that now is over $30,000 purse. It's just that's what we're talking about.
And the little homework I've done, the dividing line seems to be 2018 to 2019. In 2018, Churchill Downs maiden special weight was $57,000. In 2019, it went to $95,000. And then it went down in 20 to 79 thousand because of COVID, but every year since it's gone, in 21 it's 100,000 for a maiden special weight, and ever since that 22, 23, 24, you're at $120,000 for a maiden special weight. And that money has in a lot of ways, it is good for the major stables, the powerful stables, the people who are buying very expensive horses, and in many ways made it more difficult for what I would think were the mid-level stables. And where we have seen it affect us the most is, we're talking about the purses for maiden special weights and allowances going up, and that has an effect on us as much as high tide raises all ships. But where we've seen the most effect is where when the purses for claiming races skyrocketed. Now they're running a maiden 50 for $58,000.
And that used to be in the like what 20 or 25,000 range, probably.
Closer to half of the personal baggage, and that more specifically has impacted us because there is so much money in claiming races that if you run your horse where it has a chance to win, it is almost certainly going to get claimed. And it's a domino effect for us because we are value shoppers. We are looking for horses that penhookers can't use, looking for horses that people can't make money off of. And what we get are turf horses, backwards horses that need to be back in 2-year-olds or 3-year-olds. And what that means is, and what we did for the longest time is develop those horses, take our time with them, be patient with them, drop them down in the claiming races, boost their confidence up. And we would develop a horse over time and use claiming races. Now that's not so much at our disposal. We almost become forced to run horses over their heads because if we don't, we risk losing them. If you're at Keeneland, Churchill, even Turfway, especially at the holiday meet, if you're 5-to-1 or below, and especially 3-to-1 below or below, the chances of you getting claimed are very strong. And Jared and I, when we talk about what race is next for a certain horse, we have to put it. We used to have a great sense of whether or not we could go in a claiming race and still have the horse afterwards. And being confident about that let us kind of manage the horses a little bit better. But nowadays, we've just come to accept the fact if you put them in for that tag, you got to be ready to sell it. You just have to assume they're going to be gone. And that is what cha has changed our approach dramatically over the last couple of years. And you've also got to factor in that our trainers want to win races. They want to, they've got to get W's. They got to win races. We may want to protect the horse and not lose a horse and develop it over time, but how patient are they going to be letting us finish fourth and fifth while we develop this horse when they want to win out of it yesterday? So it's made things more difficult, but I also feel like we have to adapt. We've had to get some of these horses in these types of races where they're vulnerable, but we still have to win races. Our trainers still have to win more races. And I think in the short term, what we're trying to do is be careful about the horses we expose. We're going to lose more horses going forward until something changes down the road. If we want to win races, I think we're going to lose more horses, but we need to be ready to replace them to survive with things like this, new avenues of buying horses. And what we need to do is, and it becomes even more of a numbers game. We need to have 4 or 5 to find the 1 or 2 that can run in maiden special weights and allowance races and go on to be stake horses to be viable. So those are my thoughts. And just to sum it up, I really think the increased purse structure, while on the surface, is great for racing and helps make racing in Kentucky healthy. There are some hidden, bumps along the way that we're having.
Yeah, and you know, and there's things that you know even make that even more complicated, the issues that we're facing even more complicated. You know, just as an example. So I'm actually gonna give you a couple of examples. You know, when we have a horse with the Steve Margolis, for example, Steve's got a small stable. We love Steve. We think he's a hell of a horseman, and we'd love to send him more horses. But you know, when Churchill Downs is running, it's almost impossible for him to race anywhere other than Churchill. You know, Oathbreaker is a perfect example. We would love to send him to a maiden special weight at Indiana. We haven't been able to do that. And we can't do that because with the racing secretary, you know, if he tells the racing secretary that we're gonna ship a horse out to race at another track, the racing secretary is gonna say, don't bring the horse back. You're stabled here. You run your horses here. We got to fill our races at Churchill Downs. I think a lot of people don't realize that's how that happens. You know, people love it when we announce that we're sending horses to Brendan Walsh because Brendan is, you know, truly one of the best trainers in North America right now. But you know what? No one's more driven to win than him. And I would say the few, you know, we don't have many disagreements with Brendan, but the ones that we've had, they've probably come over whether or not we put a horse in a claiming race. And you know, Brendan, the last thing that Brendan wants to do, he does not want to go run at Belterra Park. It's not what he wants to be. It's not where he wants to run his horses. So if you got horses with Brendan that you want to protect by sending them to a maiden special weight at Belterra Park, he has no interest in it. He's going to tell us, come pick up the horse. You know, he'd much rather run it for a maiden 15 at Churchill and get the win and then move on from it. And neither approach is right or wrong. You know, it's just, you know, it's a preference.
Yeah, and where Brendan is, I really think if you want to be the type of trainer who is relevant on the main stage, you know, getting all the publicity for winning the big races, that's the mindset. I've just kind of come to the conclusion. I'd do it like he did it, does it too, you
And
know.
that's how all those trainers that are at that level, that's what they do.
That's what they do. They have a lot
And
of
so,
horses. They process. And one thing I just wanted to add, you know, people like it when we send horses to Brendan, and he's one of the best trainers in the country. But I also, just because we don't send a horse to Brendan doesn't mean that there's necessarily a problem with the horse. It
correct.
it's more they need to be ready to rock and roll and stand out when they go to Brendan. You know, if we have a horse that needs a little more TLC, a little more bring along at a slower pace, a little more individualized attention, Brendan might not be the best place to send them. You know, they need to, when they get into his program, they got to impress today, you know. You know, whereas some of the other trainers we use, they can just, like I say, pay a little more attention, be a little more patient, because Brendan's got, you know, Godolphin horses he's got to keep stalls open for, you know, and there's a lot of pressure there. But that's thing something I that comes up a lot too. I just, because a horse doesn't go to Brendan, doesn't mean there's we think. It's not always just because of our perceived talent that horse has. It's just more of a timing thing. Who needs more TLC? And so that's my thoughts on that.
Yeah, and to back that up, I mean, I think you could probably ask Brendan today, and as much as he liked Temple City Terror from the time that he got her to the time that it took 10 races for her to break her maiden, and we never put her in for a tag, Brendan would probably agree that he would not take that same approach with her today. Because when Brendan was doing that with her, he had not made as big a splash on the national stage and the world stage, for that matter. That he has since then. You know, he was still pretty small, or relatively smaller, and he was doing things, you know, differently at that point than he is now. And, you know, again, that's not saying he should be doing it one way or the other. He's doing what works for him, and it's working damn well. But I don't think you would see the same thing now that we saw 6 or 7 years ago, whatever
Well, yeah,
that was.
that was 2017, and the world was just different, and it's not right or wrong. It was just everybody's got to get with the new realities, and yeah, it just when he first got her, and when she was first running, we were kind of back in still in those good old days where you had time to develop all this,
And Mark, I think this is, leads into another thing you and I have talked a lot about. And anybody that's in on some of our turf horses that have been running at Belterra Park lately, as Kentucky has risen and racing has gotten stronger and stronger in Kentucky, it's had the same effect on Indiana and Belterra Park because there's more horses, located in Kentucky, and there's not always enough races for them. They're not always quite, maybe that's, some aren't as talented enough, aren't talented enough to win those $120,000 maidens at Churchill. But they're, they look at opportunities then at Indiana and Belterra Park. And I mean, my goodness, the turf racing at Belterra Park is unrecognizable. It is just, running for $16,000 purses. It just, every time I open up the PPs on one of our races, for especially for turf race, my jaw hits the floor.
Yeah, they the race that Temple City Magic was in the other day went 135 change. That's fast for that's a stout race for Belterra maiden special weight.
Anywhere.
I think the changes really affect us in two ways. One, in claiming, because what we talked about, there's so much money involved, and people, our horses have a target on their back when we got them in the right race. And the other way is that's the money and the purse structure has affected our approach to claiming races. And the other big way the change has affected us is the higher concentration of talent. I say Kentucky, but all the surrounding racing, you just call it the Midwest racing. The high tide has lifted everything. And racing at Belterra, especially on the turf, there might be another issue, but on the turf, a lot more turf horses are staying here, and not every one of them is, a $400,000, into mischief or, well-bred thing. Because, at a maiden special weight level at Keeneland and Churchill Downs and Kentucky Downs and even Turfway now, you're going to have to, we do it with some of our horses. We have, horses we buy for 40 and 50 and 60 that can compete at a maiden special weight level. Irish Aces, Temple City Terrier, and da da da. But by and large, you just got to be the best. It's the best racing in North America right now, and you've got to be really, really good. And you can be a touch below that and wind up at Indiana or Belterra because you just can't quite win at those other places, So the high tide has definitely all the local ships have been raised by the high tide of purses.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're seeing more. I'd extend that on even out to Hawthorne. Racing out there has gotten tougher than it ever was. Of course, part of that is the closing of Arlington, but still, I mean, it's just it's tough sledding out there everywhere for sure.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
So going forward, we just have to adapt on how we get horses and when we get horses. I expect that we're going to be claiming more. We're going to try to claim one tomorrow, being Wednesday. We'll see what happens. And again, it's just we've got to make a change. And just speaking of claiming horses, I said this in Mama Lou's race recap the other day, just to give an idea of the demand for horses. Coming into this year, Well, we've raced a lot at Belterra Park, racing a lot of claiming races at Belterra Park over the many years we've been based here, since we moved out of West Virginia. And we had two horses ever claimed from us at Belterra Park in 12 years, 13 years, something like that. We've had three claim from us there this year.
And I would tell people that's the big thing you're going to see. If we have to win races to stay viable, we have to win races. So we're going to see more horses get claimed because we are going to have to get them where they can win. What our job is to do, and what makes it tricky is knowing the upside for certain horses and protecting them. The ones that, you might have a horse that's 3-1 for maiden 30, and we know enough about it this time that we realize, we think, and we're sure we're not selling the next ruffian for 30, right? And that's our job right now, because we're going to lose more horses. Our job is to do our best, and I can't say it won't ever happen. The Derby winner a couple of years ago was claimed for what?
30.
35, 50 as a 2-year-old?
30.
30. So, I hope nothing like that ever happens to us. But our job is to, we got to get them where they can win. We used to be able to do that pretty freely using claiming races, but now we need to know our horses better than we've ever known them, because the ones that we think have a big upside somewhere down the road, those are the ones we might need to run over their heads a little bit for a while. While the ones that we kind of foresee, are going to win two or three races, earn 40 or 50, those are the ones that are going to have to go out there and probably be exposed. But we're just going to have to replace them with another horse.
And there's always going to be horse, racing in Kentucky, at Churchill, Keeneland, Turfway, Ellis, they're always going to be much more exposed than they are at, Indiana and Belterra Park. But they are still exposed at Indiana and Belterra Park as well. But, it just, we don't always think that just because we're putting one in a claiming race, we're not trying to get rid of it. I want to hammer that home. It doesn't mean
I
that
hear
we
that.
want to get rid of the horse.
I hear that a lot. Like, you've given up on the horse. You
Yeah.
don't care about the horse anymore. And that is never the case. It's almost always we want to use this claiming race. Something that hasn't changed is the majority of races, if you took all the condition books in the country and listed all the races, I would estimate 60, 75% of the races in the country are claiming races. We can't just not run in claiming races, so it's going to happen, and we're going to have to, continue to run in these claiming races. But like I say, just realize that, there's more people looking nowadays than ever.
Yeah, like I said, we're not giving up on the horse. We're trying desperately to find where the horse can be competitive and learn and grow and hopefully bring home a win.
And
That
that gets back to developing horses.
yeah.
We would use claiming races to, as to find out, if you're lucky, you get these horses and you think what they are based on the way they trained as 2-year-olds at the farm, da da da, and they're exactly what you thought they were. But that doesn't happen very often. It's almost always you've got to learn what this horse is by running them, tweaking this, and we used to be able to do that a little more freely. Put them in a claiming race to see if they're turf, or put them in a claiming race to build their confidence up, because that's a big thing. You get a horse, who forgot what it's supposed to do, and finishing behind other horses, give them an opportunity to actually win, and it just reignites them. But it's become a little more difficult to do that, and like I say, we just have to adapt.
And so, I would reiterate, when you see your horse, or you get an email update and says your horse is going into a claiming race, we're not trying to dump the horse. But continue. If you got questions, you got concerns, you guys know our numbers, you got our phone numbers, you got our email addresses. We've never, ever once in any way, denied a phone call or refused to answer a question. Call us, talk to us. We'll listen. We may not, you may not be able to convince us to change our minds, but we'll listen and we'll share our reasoning and share our thought processes with you. But in the end, we are going to listen, and then we're going to make the decision that we think is best for the horse. And I will say this, we have changed our minds on occasion. It does happen. So
We did it this
we
morning.
want you. We did it this morning. That's exactly right.
We had a partner who we were thinking one thing, and he made a good argument, and we didn't want to dig our heels in and just argue because our original stance was this, and we're gonna do, he made sense. And at the end of the day, nobody, Brendan doesn't know what's gonna happen. I don't know what's gonna happen, and a lot of these calls we have to make are, they're very difficult decisions because we're dealing with livestock. It's very difficult to, you can almost never say you're right, So I think you have, and a lot of our people are very knowledgeable and they come up with good ideas. So believe me, we pay attention.
Yep, absolutely. Well, I hope that this discussion kind of helps everybody that's listening, helps the partners to kind of understand, where we are, what our mindset is, and just reinforces that, we don't make any of these decisions lightly. And a lot of times we're making the best of, making the best of the best worst choice, the best bad choice that we can. We talk about that all the time. We got three good options and none of them are good. But what's the least bad?
Yeah.
And that's what, because you can't leave them sitting in the barn all the time,
And it winds up, I would have to guess, but the percentage of times we have the exact turf, we have the exact surface, the exact distance, the exact jockey we want. It's probably, when we win races, that's when we've been able to line everything up. We're almost always just getting as close as we can, to what is the right situation for the horse.
Yep, absolutely. So, we want to thank everybody for indulging us and allowing us to explain kind of where we are at the moment. This is going to be, it's going to be continually adapting to the new situation and to the new realities. Hopefully we're making as many of the best decisions as we can possibly make. And we're getting us back into the winner's circle, much more often than we have been the first half of the year. So.
Yeah, and I'd say, it's no secret we've struggled through Q1 and Q2 this year. I really things are starting to turn around now. I think a lot of it's because we've got, had some older horses, some old war horses that were with us for a long time that are not in the system anymore, and we're bringing in, we're basically a team where our seniors have all graduated and we're all freshmen. That's part of it.
We're John Calipari.
We're John Calipari. We're just, well, I don't know if we're dealing with the five star. We're getting 2 star recruits and making them 5 star recruits.
That's right. That's right.
But that's part of it. And I also think part of it is, adapting to the new realities. Turnover, retiring, getting claimed, moving on from horses that have been in the system for a while, in the program for a while. And a lot of new ones are coming online now, and and as we kind of figure out how to negotiate the new landscape better, and some of these horses that show a lot of promise start, getting to the track and winning races, I think we can have a big second half of the year.
Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed.
Patty, you got anything for us?
I'm one of those people, like, because I cover, I think at this point, our partners and a lot of our listeners know that I cover European racing pretty extensively, and I would love for us to have kind of like a handicap class system. I'm not
No
saying,
argument for me on that.
yeah, like I'm not saying you should replace all claiming races, because that's just not a logical thing to ask for. Because like these horses need to move, they need to if they need to change barns, like they need to go somewhere, right? But I would love to have like a handicapping system, where if like the class fours, the class fives, the class threes, twos, ones, all the way up to the stakes horses and stuff like that. Like, I feel like, that would also, I think, make a lot of lives if for syndicates and ownership groups and partnership groups like Pocket Aces Racing, who are in a similar boat where they have a lot of different voices and a lot of different opinions on what should be happening and what to do with the horse, and it might kind of, may potentially soften an eventual transition into the claiming ranks if there was an in between. Because right now, I think the impression that I get from when people kind of ask me and talk to me about it is that there is no in between right now. Like, it's either it's an allowance horse and it's allowance level and it could potentially run against $500,000 auction horses, or it's a claimer and it always has a
Well,
target on its back, and it's like it's real weird.
there's plenty of $500,000 horses running for $20,000 tags.
Oh yeah, like there was a big stink about like that is like a $2.5 million half brother to California Chrome that was racing in a 10K claimer at Golden Gate. So it's like it happens all the time, but I'm one of those people where I like having gradual in-betweens where it's like they've been given the chance at this handicapping classing system, and if it gets to a point to where, all right, maybe it's just the program, maybe he's not agreeing with it, maybe he needs something else, and at that point you could potentially move him into the claiming, the athlete into the claiming ranks. So
Patty,
I'd like an in-between.
I agree with you completely. I've had that thought myself. I'm glad you brought it up. It's kind of we didn't invent the system. I
Yeah,
wish it was
I agree.
different. I wish it was more like Europe. I don't know who invented claiming races, but I just assume they not ever done it. I'd rather have the handicap system, but we can't change. We can only for right now. We can only. I'd love to. Maybe we can get some people together and try to figure it out. But I'm with you. I wish it was more like a handicap system.
Well, I don't remember if it was you who told me, Jared, but it's like I think somebody told me the commission would have to approve of these races, like potentially of having secretaries carding handicaps.
The racing commissions, they approve the types of races that are run at each track. If you've got a you're the racing secretary at Ellis Park, and you come up with this idea for this novel condition that might attract specific horses, you can't just throw it out there willy-nilly. It has to go through a process, and that's why you see so many, see the exact same races at a racetrack, all meet long. They just kind of get recycled and regurgitated and so forth. And every now and then you might see, you have dated claimers. That's probably where they have the most flexibility on. They can change that date, how far they look back for wind and so forth. What were you saying, Mark?
They used to have a real creative secretary at Calder, the old Calder, and they'd have those races just for gray horses. They'd have those two races that went different directions, one on the turf. Yeah, I just.
They have two races going at one time in opposite directions.
Just when you were talking about that, that reminded me of that.
But
Is
yeah, it's just
out of curiosity, do you know if if it's possible for people, like during like public commentary periods, if they were to go and chime in and start requesting like more handicaps and stuff like that being written, do you think that's something they might potentially listen to if they heard from individuals that it's a wanted
Yeah,
addition?
it would just depend on the individuals that went and talked to him about it. They're not
I,
listening to
I,
me.
Patty, I agree with Jared. I think it, if the right individuals, I don't think a grassroots, the handicappers and small owners, it would be have to be very influential people that wanted to see that happen. It's
Yeah.
my
Yep.
guess.
That's fair.
And I expect that, some of the more influential people in the game probably wouldn't,
Don't even have, they don't care. They don't run a
they
lot of
don't care,
claims.
Tom Amos and Maggie Moss, I mean, they love to claim horses. They're not gonna support something like that. So, that's how she runs her stable for the most part. I don't think Maggie buys a whole lot of yearlings or 2-year-olds. I think she mostly just claims a lot of horses. Not maybe she does, but she mostly claims a lot of horses. So
So
anyway.
it's one of those uphill battles.
Oh, very uphill, very uphill.
All right.
That's all I got. Mark, you got anything else?
I got to get in touch with the farm that has the two new horses and talk to them and tell them what to do with those horses until we get them to our place. So that
Okay.
I'm anxious to talk to Lane's Inn and just let them know we're here and what to do with them. And so,
When you get them on the phone, can you ask them to send the vet reports and the scope reports, because you can't download them off the website, off the Fasic Tipton catalog.
Sounds good.
Appreciate it.
All right. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye, Mark.
Hey, you guys got a little sneak peek into how the soup gets made.
Yeah, that's one of the fun things. So yeah, so we'll definitely once we have all those pictures and we have everything, we'll start we'll make sure to get everything available to you all so you can get a good look at them, and they're very good looking horses. I think you guys will like these two additions. It's certainly a bummer that Code of Honor really only had one season. I'm curious if it'll turn out to kind of be like an Arrogate situation where he had a very very limited numbers of crops. But all of them just seem to run a hole in the wind. So I will be very curious to see how the Code of Honors work out.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, very interesting. So you guys, kind of on that topic, if you want to see those availabilities, you want to see those pictures and any of the walk videos we managed to snag before they take down this catalog. If you want to see any of those, make sure you're following our social medias. We are Pocket Aces Racing. It's Facebook, Twitter, and on Instagram. The YouTube channel is also going to have information on it. A lot of the videos, a lot of we're going to try and get some of these in the case of Malia, we're going to try and also get some of these some of her work videos posted just so you can get a good look at it later on if you're interested in her when her availability goes live. Make sure that you have also hit the subscribe button, make sure you've hit the bell so you get that notification when it goes live. Also pay attention to our Belmont preview episode that is going to drop. Did we say we were going to drop it Friday? I think we said we were going to
Friday
drop it
morning.
Friday morning. So make sure you watch that episode as well because we're going to have Dave Brown on. I also posted kind of the social media announcement about the new mini series that we're going to have on the YouTube. It is called Cut the Deck, and it's going to be the Belmont at Saratoga edition. It's kind of like the perfect first start for our little mini series, our traveling mini series. So definitely pay attention to that. We're going to have Dave Brown on. He's going to talk a little bit about what he's going to do. A little bit about, maybe potentially some guests he has in mind, and we're really excited for you guys to see that. I'm super, super jazzed for this series. So make sure you're following our YouTube. Make sure that you've got that bell selected so you get those notifications when that goes live. And other than that, have a happy Wednesday. Have a good Wednesday. Make good choices. Podcast is out.